House Finance come to order. It's 1:31 p.m. on the 19th of March 2013. We have members present: Representative Munoz, Representative Holmes, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Muir, Representative Costello Stoltz, Representative Wilson, Representative Thompson, and Vice Chair Newman. We have four bills on the schedule today. We have House Bill 87, House Bill 19, and House Bill 94, and House Bill 153. We're going to endeavor to try to move them all out, but that's an ambitious start. And I want to, I previously had planned to hear 19 first, but Representative Higgins is here and has another bill, has other committee responsibilities. I think we've probably worked out the kinks on CESA, so invite you up, Representative Higgins. And to put this before us, I'll ask Representative Wilson to move the new finance CS.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move work draft 28-LS0392/O, Michelle 318-13.
And I'll object for just a brief description of the changes from our education subcommittee chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only change in this is going to make the Department of Education have oversight of CESA versus the Governor's Council of Disability. The reason for that comes in the findings and recommendations that most of us heard on the audit report, to whereby state and federal law, it is the requirement of the Department of Education to make sure that the correct services are brought to our special education students. And now they will have the oversight of this. They already, through a special education director, meet with CESA on a regular, on regular intervals. This will now just make sure that we know who's being given services and whether or not we need to do any more. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll object. Just ask that the sponsor. I know you've been working with Representative Wilson and others. Any commentary on the?
I have, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm Pete Higgins, District 5. I appreciate being able to bring the bill back for you. And as my mom always said, you know, don't shoot yourself in the foot. If it's going well, keep it going. So. Basically, I have no questions. I think we've worked out all the problems.
We always like to introduce people by their most distinguished, honorable title, and maybe I should call you Dr. Higgins, right?
Representative Higgins is fine.
Okay. I'll remove my objection. Hearing none, the CS is adopted. Are there any amendments? Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an amendment. I thought I
yes.
gave it to staff ahead of time.
Do folks have that in there?
Oh, is it? Okay. It's in front of you. Okay, thanks.
And I'd like to recognize Co-Chair Osterman has joined us in progress.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move conceptual amendment number one.
Object.
Please speak to your amendment or some concept.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, similarly, in the findings from Ledge Budget and Audit and through discussions with Department of Education, we found that CESA's funding is not kept up with inflation, not kept up with the base student allocation or student count. CESA's an agency that is funded and has been funded flatly for a number of years, while the total number of participants has actually increased by quite a bit. This $21.50 as opposed to $15.75 would keep them basically in line with inflation and allow the services to not be further harmed into the future.
Mr. Wilson, to your objection?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you also see in here that the $15.75 is a minimum requirement, and we were not able to discuss this in our subcommittee because at that time the funding went over to Health and Social Services. Also, you'll note on page 17, if you have your booklet, it says one of the parts that they were concerned about is that the plan did not have the number of students and school district personnel receiving services and all funding sources. We will be taking that up in the interim, finding out what all the sources are, whether or not it needs to be upped by the number of students or whether we just need to look at an additional grant amount. But at this point, we were unable to discuss that because of this funding issue. Now that will be taken care of with what Representative Higgins has brought forward.
And I'll speak against the amendment just on irrespective of which agency it is. I am philosophically against indexing the appropriate channel is to work through our budget process, but that's my consistent opinion I've had in 10 years, now 11. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. through the chair, Representative Higgins, this is just something I don't understand, even if it was $21.75. But I'm a special ed student in one of our school districts in Anchorage or in Fairbanks, you know, on average costs the district over $50,000 to provide the services to, so we get adequate services to those folks. And so in rural areas, in addition to this $15 or $21, what are we providing to special ed students with severe handicaps? We must be providing something more, or if we're not, that's an education for me.
Well, from my understanding, talking with CISA, is that right now the funding that we have is basically adequate from what they're doing. They would like to have more because they have been flat funded. But they also understand that budget constraints this year are tight, and we've had our discussions. And basically, our purpose is to get past the sunset on this particular bill. And, you know, as like Representative Wilson said, we could always come back to the funding on them. This is just a minimum that we're required to do. And over the summer, you guys can look at that, and maybe you can find it some way to do that and to raise it. But they would like to have more money down the road. But right now, their concern is let's get past the sunset. So that's what this bill is.
Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
I guess I didn't mean it that way. I just mean for a student who stays in a rural area, so doesn't come to a big district where they have substantial special ed services, in addition to $21, which I don't know what $21 does, what are students with severe disabilities getting in services in addition to that, or are they not getting anything in addition to that in rural schools?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know the answer to that question, you know, because, you know, the CISA goes out to the rural areas, and that's their job, is to look for low incidence disabilities and to help as many as they can, and so it's their prerogative to do that, and I hope they're going out and doing the best they can for what they have. So without CISA here to answer that question, we'll go from there.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, just to that question, the $15 goes to, it's based on the average daily attendance. So it's not just based on how many special needs children, but that's multiplied by the 110,000 students that we have. So that money goes into CISA for the $15, and I think it's 75 cents. So it's not just $15.75 for that one student.
Wrap up, Representative Kawasaki.
Yep, thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, just again, just to reiterate, in the slideshow presentation that we went through hastily last time, it just shows that CISA's baseline budget for the low incidence disabilities budget was established 14 years ago. Just inflation purely, has decreased in value over 36%. This is a small sum that affects the most vulnerable folks that are out there, especially in rural Alaska, where they might not have these assets available to them within their own school districts. And I will point out that when we passed the Joint Legislative Education Task Force recommendations a few years ago, one of those things was to increase the intensive needs resources to schools. I think we're up to 13 times the base student allocation, which ends up being a pretty large sum, $70,000 a year or more a year that we're spending on intensive needs. And not every intensive needs student can qualify for this the similar program. But I just think it's money that seems to be well spent, seems to be wisely spent, and impacts the kids who need it the most.
Your objection maintained, Representative Wilson?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
The clerk call the roll.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Costello?
No.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Holmes?
No.
Representative Munoz?
No.
Representative Newman?
No.
Representative Stoltz?
No.
Representative Osterman?
No.
Clerk, please tally the roll.
9 nay, 2 yay.
So a vote of 2 in favor, 9 opposed, the amendment fails. Are there other amendments? Let's go to the fiscal note. Senator Costello.
Mr. Co-Chair, we have one fiscal note for CS for House Bill 87, dated February 22nd, 2013, from the Department of Education and Early Development. Allocation Special Schools, OMB Component Number 2735. The fiscal note shows an impact of $2,035,500 for fiscal year 2014 for every fiscal year following that year.
I'm going to be just very informal here. Ms. Herman, she's with the Department of Education. Is this fiscal note accurate with the past amendment?
The financial part is yes.
Yeah. And Ms. Herman has indicated yes. So that. Representative Wilson, would you like to do the honors?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move CS for House Bill Number 87, Finance 28-LS0392-0-31813 from committee with fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Are there any objections?
Object briefly.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am objecting just because I haven't really heard from the Department of Education on the implication of this amended bill. I don't know if there's anybody from the department that could speak on their behalf.
Ms. Herman, won't you? She's been wishing she would get to come up here, so it's not her birthday, but within the constraints of this question just coming up right now, Ms. Herman and Ms. Noodleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Marcy Herman. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Education and Early Development. And with me is Elizabeth Noodleman, the Director of School Finance and Facilities. Through the Chair, Representative Kawasaki, could you repeat your question, please?
Thank you, Mr. Through the Chair. I just wanted to hear what the department had to say about this change, because it would make the department basically the governing agency over CESA, where it used to be under the Council of Disability Special Ed.
Through the Chair, Representative Kawasaki, the fiscal note that is attached, so long as CESA continues to operate as it's currently operating, then the costs would be those that are in your fiscal note.
That was Ms. Noodleman from the Department of Education.
Follow-up?
Representative Kawasaki.
Yes. So I'm a little bit unclear about how the Governor's Council used to be the governing agency. And so now with this change, it's pretty substantive. It means that your department will take over the administration and basically governance. So I'm wondering what you'll do differently than what process will be different, how the process is going to be different.
Through the Chair, again, this is Elizabeth Noodleman, Director of School Finance for Department of Education, Representative Kawasaki. The CESA organization currently is governed underneath the Governor's Board. It is run by the CESA Board of Directors, and so the CESA Board, with their executive director, would run CESA. And if the intent is to consolidate into one organization, we would still have the CESA Board and the executive director and the employees moving forward with the CESA organization. And under that structure, that fiscal note then would cover the same costs as it did in prior years. Beyond that, I would, refer to the sponsor for any further questions on the governing in the CS.
Okay.
Yes.
It would have been nice to have, if you would have raised this point when the CS was before us. I know you're not a long timer in this committee and may not be here longer, but I would like you to follow some protocol for Tim Kawasaki.
Okay.
It's not a shrugging matter. It's a,
I apologize.
I saw this morning you don't.
I thought we were going to have comments from the department, that's why.
You know, normally we don't bring up department testimony during the final passage, but, you know, let's not get too cute, Representative Kawasaki. Ask your questions, and we'll proceed on.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We try to be very tolerant and lenient. I think you guys, any of the members who have served here, please do not be abusive of how we try to be very flexible and accommodating. The tolerance level does erode. Please ask your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just got to see this bill this morning, so I haven't had a chance to really ask
your question, please.
Yeah, I will.
Commentary you can leave to debate.
Since CESA is a not-for-profit corporation, does that impact the department's ability to regulate? I don't know if there's other examples of a nonprofit corporation housed within statute that's dealt with in this way.
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, my understanding is that this is consolidating from having CESA in both health and social services and in Department of Education. And if there were further changes, I'm not aware of those. So currently CESA is a nonprofit, and they're administered through a board, and I would probably need to defer any other structural or legal type questions, and wouldn't be the best person to respond to that.
Any other questions? The clerk call the roll.
Mr. Chairman, I'll withdraw my objection. Thanks.
Hearing no objections to the motion to move the bill out of committee. I believe you made the motion. I kind of forget. That's
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Just temporarily. I guess I don't necessarily need to hear from anybody else. On the other hand, I still haven't been given a great understanding as to why we're switching agencies governing CESA. I don't necessarily see any problem between either department running it. I just don't know why we're making the change.
Well, there was a not the most unscathing audit report, but I'll leave that answer to Representative Wilson.
Let me just clarify. We had a lot of talk about this in our subcommittee. Basically what it is that the Governor's Council does not have the authority if the money isn't spent correctly to do anything about it. And since it, by federal and state law, for the Department of Education to be responsible for those under special education, it makes sense that the commissioner, who does have that type of authority, would be able to monitor what students are being helped and make sure that it's being done correctly. I think at the time when CESA was put in, there wasn't all the special education laws that there currently are. And so at the time, it made sense that it went to this committee. But now that the special education come a long way with very specific laws that we have to do, there's no reason to have a grant pass through from one agency to the other. The Governor's Council will still do their job. They will continue to look at programs and look at how we're attending to those types of events. So that won't change whatsoever. All it does is give the authority to the department to make sure that these students are getting the help that they need and the money is being spent correctly. And it also then gives them the authority, if more funding later is needed, that they will be able to bring it forth within their budget, which they cannot currently do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems like a fair explanation.
Are any objections maintained? Hearing none, the bill is reported out of committee with signed individual recommendations with the attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease.
Never got that.
Finance come back to order. I have to brief at ease. It's 1:54. Still on the 19th. Our next bill before us is House Bill 19, permanent motor vehicle and trailer registration. We've previously heard the bill once or twice and had public testimony, which was closed. We have Department of Administration online. It's the real crux of this is going to be the fiscal note. Everybody probably likes the notion of the concept of permanent registration. That'll probably be the discussion. So anticipate questions from to Ms. Erickson. So, Mr. Breeze, just previously outline the bill again, just the brief version.
Through the chair, my name is Darrell Breeze, aide to Representative Bill Stoltz. House Bill 19 allows for permanent registration to be offered through the Division of Motor Vehicles for non-commercial motor vehicles older than 8 years old and non-commercial trailers for the payment of an extra fee of $25 on top of the normal fee that is charged for the regular biannual registration when a person goes in and applies for the permanent registration. The owner of the vehicle or the trailer have a choice to stick with the biannual registration that's currently in statute or to elect to select the permanent vehicle registration or trailer registration. It's important to note that the permanent registration on both the trailers and vehicles is non-transferable when the vehicle or trailer is sold or a new owner is registered. The permanent registration expires at that point. I guess I'll be open to answer any questions if there's specifics regarding the bill or the fiscal bill.
The opt-out provision for the municipalities?
The bill also offers municipalities a provision to establish their own motor vehicle registration tax rate for vehicles that are permanently registered. Currently, they're only allowed to do that for vehicles based on the age of the vehicle. This allows them to adopt by ordinance local statutes and regulations that allow them to set a rate for motor vehicle registration for motor vehicles and trailers that are registered permanently. It has to be done by an ordinance that's passed either by a city council or a local assembly, and that rate can be set as whatever they determine is necessary.
And that is for the portion that of the tax that is the state that the state collects on behalf of local governments. And I'll just very briefly, as my philosophy, I wanted to provide a mechanism for convenience of folks that don't like dealing with government to have an option, especially on the trailer portion, to permanently register the vehicle. I know those of us that have boat trailers or snow machine trailers, it's something you often forget about. Some years they don't even open up our fisheries and we don't get our boat trailers out. Depends on where you live. Certainly some years we don't have snow and you don't get the trailers out. Some years we're in session all year, you don't get your snow machine trailer out. And like on the record, I do have a 1999 Ford pickup and a boat trailer, so I like hundreds of thousands of other Alaskans are impacted by this legislation. Should I choose to go the customer optional route of a permanent registration for either of those? With that, questions from the committee? And more pointedly, any questions from Ms. Erickson? I would like on the record the department, even if I have the votes to move it out, I want to make sure on the record the fiscal note is well described and talked to. Ms. Erickson, are you there?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Any general comments before we get into the financial part of this? Your ability to administer this, et cetera?
No, Mr. Chairman, I am available for any questions.
You can't administer it, though, right?
Yes, sir, we can.
Okay. We got that out. Questions for Ms. Erickson, Representative Kawasaki?
Thank you, and I know you're new to the division, but I was wondering if you could tell me the history of why the DMV state agency collects on behalf of municipalities.
Through the chair, Representative Kalasaki, I'm afraid I don't know the history on that. It's
on
over
some municipalities, I believe, right?
Okay.
I do recall, just one anecdotal. I remember the two-year registration was put into place, one, I think, by an Anchorage legislator who it was tied in with the inspection and emissions program to allow that to coincide with the IM tests. And I recall under the Knowles administration, the Department of Administration Commissioner Mark Boyer, who's now moved on to the private sector and other pursuits, was pretty giddy about it because that two-year registration said, man, I'm going to make out on this fiscal note, because a lot of people sell a vehicle, wreck a vehicle. It was a big financial boom. This is really a gamble that people are going to take, whether or not this is the best financial deal. If we have an economic downturn, I bet you in 1986 and 87, a lot of vehicles that people might have, if they had been available, probably left Alaska and didn't come back. You might transfer them to another individual. This is not tied to the vehicle. It's tied to the ownership. So you have to make that decision, much like deciding whether or not you're going to live long enough to make that life membership of the Rotary Club or the Elks or anything else work out for you. So, that's on the fiscal note. I think there are some assumptions, which I'm not sure how many people will participate. I'm not sure with, particularly in Anchorage, the bulk of our population, where we have turnovers of 50% every 5 to 10 years or less, somebody does buy this, they will, this might not be a good deal for them if they're find themselves moving out of Alaska like many Alaskans do. So, but that's more commentary and explanation of, what Representative Guerra.
I think, as chair, would you mind if I added my lifetime fishing and hunting license bill to this?
I anticipated that, and by gosh, if the fishing game would have been here, I might have jumped on that. I would have concerns about it. I like the idea. I just don't know how it affects the fishing game fund and other things. But hopefully we'll get to discuss that one.
Thank you, Mr. Through the Chair. Not to belabor points, but in the bill we said it should not have any impact on the Fish and Game Fund and the things that licenses support. Can we add it now?
I'm in a relatively good mood today, but not that good a mood. Did you have a motion or amendment?
No.
Okay.
I'll find another vehicle.
Like the one you have vehicle. Yeah, these trailers are not commercial. They can't carry that much cargo. Representative Newman, and then Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that this may not be the vehicle to put it on, but I'm also concerned too about the 2-year registration that we have at DMV, and I think that the little history on that is they went back to do that to try and reduce their cost, but maybe if I remember right, they bring in more money than it takes to run their operations anyhow. So maybe someday we could work on a piece of legislation that brings it back to just single-year registration. I know that would help a considerable amount of people in my district. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I tried to pursue an answer what the fiscal impact was, and I didn't get a lot of it. This is one where it might have cost the it might have going to the 1 year shorter might have cost the department. I don't think they wanted to offer up that too much information. So, I mean, no aspersions on Ms. Erickson. I think we talked to Mr. Thayer. Representative Wilson.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, you might have ruined my question, but I'll try it anyway to Ms. Erickson. I know this shows that a loss of revenue, but I guess my question is, because the department does make money, more money than what it takes to run it, will you still have more money than it takes to run the department if this were to pass?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we certainly would.
Thank you.
And for the short term, there's a big bump in the department's coffers. Is that correct? or is there a positive, let me not make the subjective statement first. Ms. Erickson, what is the impact on the department for the short term?
For the short term, Mr. Chairman, in 2014, we would see a bump of over $6 million, and also in 2015, we would see a bump of nearly $7,500,000.
On your projections, those are...
That's correct. That's based on the number of vehicles that we approximate will be eligible for permanent registration, which is 478,000 plus for motor vehicles and over 115,000 trailers.
Representative Guerra?
Mr. Chair, I'm just guessing. I don't know this. Ms. Erickson, can you tell me, does that become a negative number over time or... Not
through the chair, Representative Guerra, it does become a negative beginning in 2016, where the vehicles that would be registering biennially will no longer be able to be registered. So in 2014 and 15, you have the $25 increase for the permanent registration. But after that, when the vehicles are no longer to be registered, you don't get any revenues at all.
And through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
And then do you have an estimate as to when it stabilizes in the future, what the annual loss might be to DMV, or is it the annual loss to the communities?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, the loss isn't really to DMV. It's really to the state. And when the vehicles come available for registration, once they become permanently registered, then it just sort of compounds each year. Starting in 2016, we lose, you know, in the $25 million range.
Yeah, that's your projection, the speculation.
That is true, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of question that speculation or assumption on that, because I happen to know a guy who's got a garbage trailer who doesn't have it licensed, I don't think, because he only goes to the dump with it like three or four times a year. And this may persuade that guy to put a license on that one so he doesn't have to worry about it. So I think that it could go in the opposite. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I doubt it.
That's about as accurate a speculation as the $25 million fiscal note.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's,
absolutely.
The predictive behavior of the Big Lake or Talkeetna, wherever he happens to live. We're not pinning him down too much, Representative Newman. And it could be a lot of our districts. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What percentage of the permanent fee would be shared with the communities? Would it be consistent with what you, how you divide the revenues? You know, currently, or is there a different division?
I can answer the question. Through the chair, Representative Munoz, the permit registration fee goes directly to the Division of Motor Vehicles, and thus the state. The cities and municipalities that have motor vehicle registration tax are those that get only what they've passed and approved to charge as a motor vehicle registration tax. The $25 fee goes into the general fund, basically, and then is allocated as... Mm-hmm. Finance Committee chooses.
Well, through the constitutional appropriation process. So I think we would like to refer to that. And a municipality that wishes to continue after 8 years, I just paid mine on my little Ford Focus. It was $230, and the most of that was taxes. That's
One final question. Have you estimated what the savings, the average savings might be on a typical kind of average life car to the individual?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, it's difficult to estimate that because some vehicles are going to last longer than others, and determining how long a vehicle is going to be operational is a tough guess. Currently, I believe the average age of the vehicles in the state of Alaska is 13 years old. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at a five-year, if you're based on the average, additional time that someone will have on as part of the permanent registration. However, there are some vehicles. I think the oldest vehicle is a 1901 vehicle that's currently registered, and that vehicle could have a long, has a long life. So, yeah. And as you get into classic vehicles, the life lasts longer as well because they're not driven as much.
This really, for me, in introducing this was not just this year, but in previous sessions, was at some point, I think government has gotten its tax out of a vehicle, especially older vehicles are used less. And if you're in an organized area, you never own your property, and it was maybe a dream, maybe you can actually own your car without government having, but just the simple dream of a kid from Chugiak. Any other questions? All right. I think I saw an amendment in the packet. Did you have the amendment, Representative Kawasaki?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually did bring it up, but it didn't get put in time, but I could hand it out and speak to it and withdraw it.
Why don't we let's put it, we'll just take a brief at ease. I didn't know if it had been distributed. We'll take a brief at ease so we can get it distributed. Does everybody have the amendment in front of them? Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number one, and I'll withdraw it briefly.
I'll object. I think it's worthy of being put on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in discussing residency issues and the permanent fund and whether a person actually lives in the state or not, it's become quite complex, quite mired in policy. One of the things in establishing residency, and this is just for the Alaska Permanent Fund that they use for proof of establishing residency and or an intent to return and remain indefinitely in Alaska, they use things like proof of home ownership, employment records, school records, voter registration, motor vehicle registration records, and licenses such as hunting and fishing licenses. I wanted to make sure, Mr. Chair, that if we do pass this bill goes along, that it's not exclusively used in determining or establishing residency. In speaking with the Permanent Fund Division, they said sometimes that they do use prima facie evidence in determining those. And so I wanted to make sure that if a person does have a permanent vehicle registration, that that's not considered prima facie evidence. I think I actually will have to amend my amendment in the future so that it could be used, but not be used as the sole factor in determining eligibility for a permanent fund dividend.
Representative Wilson.
And maybe question can't be answered right now, but I just went through, was helping somebody do the permanent fund. If you've registered your vehicle, you put it down on your thing saying that that's one of the checklists, my driver's license, my vehicle. And so if I even register for 2 years, it's actually counted as part of my that I'm going to stay here. So I just don't really understand where you're trying to go, because you can already use your vehicle registration even for 2 years. That's saying that that's another way you're saying you're going to stay here in the state of Alaska, so I don't see where this changes anything if I'm doing a permanent one or one for 2 years.
Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
Representative Wilson, and this is the problem that I see. You know, there are those who honestly apply for their permanent fund dividends, and there are those who really aren't residents, and they're looking for ways to prove residency. Right now, you've got to pay for your registration every 2 years. Commissioner looks at that as one factor in determining whether you're a resident. If we pass this bill and you really want to commit fraud, you're like, wow, $25 once. That's all I have to pay. And then from now on, I'm going to be able to use that as a factor in showing people I'm a resident for the state of Alaska for my permanent fund dividend. It only costs $25 under this bill to do that, whereas under the current law, it costs $25 every 2 years, or the amount of money every 2 years. It's a much cheaper way to prove residency that you don't have if you're really trying to prevent permanent fund dividend fraud. But it's a difficult amendment to figure out how to do.
In my discussions with the dividend division in the past, it's usually the opposite. It's the when the person takes the negative action and registers a vehicle and taking advantage of another state, or and that's usually the trigger. It's the negative trigger, not the positive trigger. That's the, they call them the red flags. But I think this is worth seeing if there's a way. And I'd like my staff as well to have further discussions with the dividend division, and we don't want this vehicle, not to be a, no unintended, to be a vehicle for unintended consequences. So.
Thank Mr. Chair, I would just like to withdraw amendment number one.
Without objection, withdrawn. Any other questions? Representative Costello.
Mr. Co-Chair, we have one fiscal note for CS for House Bill 19 Transportation dated February 15, 2013, from the Department of Administration Allocation Motor Vehicles, component number 2348. It shows a fiscal impact of $100,100 for fiscal year 14 for computer, for database changes. It also shows a change in revenues to the state of Alaska for fiscal year 2014. Additional revenues of $5,346,000. In fiscal year 15, additional revenues of $5,982,000. In fiscal year 16, a decrease in revenues of $17,836,000. In fiscal year 17, a decrease of state revenues to the tune of $20,128,000. In fiscal year 18, a decrease of revenues to the state in the amount of $20,128,000. And in fiscal year 19, a decrease in revenues to the state of $22,420,000.
And those aren't real dollars, but those are projections or speculations on trying to predict behavior. But important that they are before us, at least in that form. So appreciate the department's and the division's best efforts to try to give us let us know potential impacts or speculative impacts. Representative Newman, would you like to move the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move committee substitute for House Bill Number 19, Transportation Version 28-LS0130/U from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Are there any objections? Representative Kawasaki?
I'll object just for purposes of discussion.
Sure.
In the bill packet today, there's perceived projected collections for individual communities that do have a motor vehicle registration tax that's collected by the state. Fairbanks is not one of them, but I will note that it looks like there will be a significant impact perhaps to some of these communities, and I just wanted to make sure that that was on the record. And with that, I'll withdraw my objection.
And for that, that's why we wanted to give those communities the ability to respond at their local level. Hearing no objection, the bill's moved out of committee. We'll take a brief at ease.
Finance Committee back into order. The time is 12:22. Before us, we have committee substitute for House Bill number 153, Transportation, / U. Committee discussion, Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee, for hearing this bill today. HB 153 would simply rename a portion of the current Minnesota Drive as the Walter J. Hickel Parkway. I don't think Wally Hickel is a stranger to anybody in this committee or hardly anybody else in Alaska. He arrived in Alaska with 37 cents in his pocket. He was a boxer, and he worked, perhaps fought, his way up to be Secretary of the Interior and twice served as governor of this state. Governor Hickel pushed hard to open Prudhoe Bay for oil development and oversaw the permitting process for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, through which flows the revenue lifeblood of our state. For these and many other reasons, we believe it is most important to rename a portion of Minnesota Drive, the Walter J. Hickel Parkway. My staffer, Forrest Wolf, is here to address some of the details of the bill, if you wish, and I also want to thank my friend Kirk Wickersham for bringing this subject to my attention, and I believe he is on the line. I think he's back in Denver someplace to testify as well, and thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lynn, do we have any questions for Representative Lynn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Garrett.
Thank you. Representative, I'd like to co-sponsor this, but it's by the House Transportation Committee, but as then it's got you as a sponsor. I always thought committee bills didn't have a sponsor, or is this a bill that you can't co-sponsor?
Through the chair, Representative Garrett, this is not a committee bill. This is my own bill.
Okay.
And you're welcome to co-sponsor it.
Representative Kalasak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lynn, why was the Minnesota Drive portion between O'Malley and whatever it is, the Seward Highway, why was that selected?
it seemed to be the most used part of the highway. It goes down 15. And as you know, it makes a curve. No, you don't know. Because you're in that other country up there, Fairbanks. The Minnesota Expressway is a major north-south thoroughfare in Anchorage. And this would be, we believe, the most appropriate portion of that expressway to name that highway with the least disturbance of anything. And Kirk Wickersham can explain why he recommended that to me.
Representative Lynn, or Holmes, I mean.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd hazard a guess that it might have something to do with the fact that the Governor Hickel was my constituent, and that is a thoroughfare that runs not only fairly close to his house, but That's also true. Fairly close to his hotel.
Although his hotel is downtown, and I believe this starts at 15th.
Representative Kossack.
Just to follow up, and I guess, you know, whenever we name these or redesignate roads or things like this, the question always comes up whether the family wants that to happen.
It's my understanding that Irma Lee, that's her name, Irma Lee is well aware of this and supports it.
And then follow up.
We've not asked her to testify.
And then just a follow-up question briefly. If this act redesignates Minnesota Drive portion between those two places, does anything have to happen when it comes to, like, postal mail, or is it, like, an honorary designation? So it doesn't change any of the...
We are planning, through the chair, Reverend Kawasaki, two large signs designate this. But the street addresses would remain the same because we don't want to get involved in a large fiscal note or inconvenience people.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Online, we do have Scott Thomas from the Department of Transportation and Mr. Wickersham, I guess, for public testimony. We'll go to public testimony now, Mr. Wickersham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I I did ask my friend Representative Lynn to propose this. And, you know, it's my understanding that Minnesota Bypass was so named simply because that was the street in Spinard, the state-named street in Spinard that got widened and extended. And I grew up in Minnesota, and I don't have anything against the state of Minnesota, but it's a completely random name for one of the two or three major freeways in Anchorage. And certainly for anybody arriving at the airport, the major gateway into the city. And last year's bill, which I believe passed 40-0 in the House, was a bill that co-designated the name of the road as the Minnesota Expressway or Minnesota Hickel Expressway or something like that. And I would encourage you to replace that name, to eliminate the name Minnesota and to rename it for Governor Hickel, simply because the designation of Minnesota is really pretty meaningless as far as the city and the state is concerned. I too don't want to inconvenience people whose addresses might be affected, and it's my understanding that they can continue to receive mail indefinitely at the Minnesota address. But there aren't very many residences or businesses along that stretch, maybe 15 or 20 or so. So I seriously hope that this bill can pass. I very much appreciate the opportunity to testify on it. One thing that I would add to Representative Lynn's remarks is the intellectual rigor and the intellectual gifts that the governor gave us. He gave us the name, the owner state. He is the person who created the intellectual framework for the modern state of Alaska. So I certainly hope you can see your way to passing this bill forward to the floor of the House.
Thank you, Mr. Wickersham. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Wickersham. We do have Scott Thomas online from DOT. Scott, did you have any comments?
I'm available for questions, but I don't have any comments.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for Mr. Thomas? Thank you. Is there any public testimony? Hearing and seeing none. Any more in online? Hearing and seeing none. Public testimony is closed. Bring it back to the committee. Fiscal notes. Representative Costello.
Mr. Co-Chair, we have two fiscal notes. The first is for CS for House Bill 153, Transportation, fiscal note number one, dated March 13th, 2013, from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, the allocation Central Region Highways and Aviation, OMB component number 564. The Transportation Committee zeroed out the fiscal note. In addition, we have fiscal note number two for CS for House Bill 153, Transportation. It is from the same department and allocation. That fiscal note is for $15,000 for fiscal year 2014, which would pay for the cost of two signs.
Do you have any questions on the fiscal note? And that fiscal note is forthcoming. We wanted to add that in there. That will be covering the cost of the signs themselves. Any other committee discussion? Representative Kawasaki.
Yeah, just a comment. My colleague and I live on Glacier Avenue, and if you Google map Glacier Avenue and the address, it sometimes appears twice because I think it used to be Glacier Highway, right? It wasn't that way. And so I just wanted to make sure that, you know, whenever we rename things, sometimes there's confusion when it comes to Google Maps. That's all I wanted to say.
So noted. Any other committee discussion? Well, the committee, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that CS for House Bill 153, Transportation, version 28-LS0598/U from committee with attached physical notes and individual recommendations.
Objection? No objection, so moved. We'll take any ideas.
Thank you very much to the committee.
Committee back to order. The time is 12:33. We are on House Bill number 94, version /A. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Doug Isaacson. I'm the representative from House District 1, which includes North Pole, Moose Creek, Salter, and Eielson. District 1 is also the home of two bridges that go across the Chena Flood Control Channel with unceremonious names, Bridge 1364 and Bridge 1866. House Bill 94 proposes to name these two parallel bridges for two unparalleled individuals in North Pole, indeed in Alaska's history, Con and Nellie Miller, also known as Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus. Not only were Con and Nellie Miller early settlers in the city of North Pole, they founded the Santa Claus House and demonstrated public service throughout their life. Con was the longest-serving mayor of North Pole, dedicating 19 years of leadership. In 1952, he carried the city's incorporation papers right here to Juneau. He also served as North Pole's postmaster and civil defense director for 20 years, as well as serving as the fire chief. Nellie served on the local school board and was the postmistress and was the town's magistrate and marriage counselor. Oh, commissioner. I won't put any personal comments in here. They passed the value of public service on to their children as well. Terry, Mike, and Merry Christmas. Many in this body will remember Terry Miller not only for the legislative office building that sits across the street here, which is named for him, but also he was the former lieutenant governor, he was a North Pole city councilman, he was a borough assemblyman, and a representative from Fairbanks, and served in the House and Senate, and was the Senate president. He and his brother Mike, actually, are the only two siblings that have both served as Senate presidents. Mike served in the House and Senate for 18 years. For their commitment to Alaska and their role in developing the city of North Pole, it is fitting that the Chena Flood Control Channel bridges be named for these two distinguished Alaskans. The northbound bridge, 1364, shall be known as the Nellie Miller Bridge, and the southbound bridge, 1866, shall be known as the Con Miller Bridge. And with that, I end my report and I'm here for questions.
Thank you, Representative Isaacson. Do we have any questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Garrett.
Do we ever get to name anything after a Democrat? Is that allowed?
I don't see any amendments, Representative Garrett.
Through the chair, I don't have any at this moment, but I suppose we have another bridge that's available for a proper person.
I'll think of something before Tuesday. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any other questions? I think we'll go to public testimony. We have Buzz Otis from North Pole. Buzz?
Good afternoon. This is Buzz Otis. I live in the North Pole area, and I am the Executive Director of North Pole Economic Development Corporation, lived in the interior since 1975, and support the bill renaming the bridges to Con and Nellie Miller. They were great individuals. I didn't have the pleasure of knowing Con, but I did Mrs. Miller, and Mrs. Claus. She was a great leader in the community, and both her and her husband had the vision of what North Pole could be and put their money where their mouth was. So I think it's a fitting tribute to them as well as their family who have done so much public service for the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Is that it, Mr. Otis?
Yes.
Thank you. I have one question. Do you think Representative Isaacson's a pretty good guy? Or?
Objection, Mr. Chair.
Am I on the record?
I think we're okay. Thank you, Mr. Otis. Any other questions from the committee? Anybody in public testimony in the audience? Hearing and seeing none. Public testimony is closed. Bring it back to the committee. Fiscal note, Representative Costello.
Mr. Kocher, we have two fiscal notes for House Bill 94. The first one was dated February 20th, 2013, from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Northern Region Highways and Aviation Allocation, OMB Component 2068. That fiscal note was zeroed out by the Transportation Committee. The second fiscal note for House Bill 94 is from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Northern Region Highways and Aviation Allocation. That fiscal note shows for fiscal year 2014, $6,900 for the creation of two signs.
Thank you. Any questions on the fiscal note? And again, I'll be forthcoming to cover costs. Will of the committee, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This used to be my old district, so I'm very honored to do this. I'd like to move House Bill number 9428-LSO407-A with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Any objection?
Object.
Okay. One objection by Representative Costello.
Mr. Kocher, there are two fiscal notes, and I think both need to be moved.
Oh, okay.
Representative Costello.
I'll make that two fiscal notes, sir, instead of one. You want me to start over again?
Please.
I'll start over. Oh, I had one here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill number 9428-LS0407-A with two fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Thank you. Is there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, the bill moves out of committee. Thank you, Representative Isaacson. And on our agenda for tomorrow, Wednesday, March 30th, we have House Bill 64 will be coming forward, which is the capital budget. There will be no public testimony, but there will be a short presentation by Karen Rayfeld from the Office of OMB. And with that, we will close committee. Thank you.